Welcome, everyone, to this week's Really Big Fan Podcast. I am your host, Chizuk, and joined, as always, by my wife and co-host, Acronym.
Who's extremely under-caffeinated right now.
Extremely under-caffeinated, but we're going to get you through it. It's okay. And, well, it's under-caffeinated, and it's you stayed up all night.
Well, yeah. I was up until 4 editing my Fall Out Boy pictures.
Yes.
Only the Fall Out Boy pictures. I literally, like, I edited the Games We Play ones this afternoon, but, like, I'm not even close to the review yet because
right.
I still have two more bands to edit.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm running on 5 hours of sleep.
Yep. So it's going to be a great show, folks.
I'm either going to be loopy as hell or non-responsive.
Right.
We'll find out.
I guess we will, because it's time. It's time for that thing that you do.
That headline thing.
You ready? Sing it away. Oh, wow. She is really under-caffeinated.
I can't get, like, if I grow up any
no energy
active, I will lose all sound in my voice.
Well, yeah, that is true. You did go to a concert last night.
Yeah, and Chelsea and I kept talking through it, like, moments of it, so we were yelling to each other, and, like, my voice is shot now, too.
Yeah. All right, well, let's start off with something that I know you'll be interested in. They're putting Cheech and Chong in Call of Duty.
I mean, I'm interested in Cheech and Chong.
You do like Cheech and Chong.
Not Call of Duty.
Well, it's fun because it's going to be part as their Blaze It Up event that'll hit on April 20th.
Of course.
420.
Of course.
Which is pretty funny. But the screenshot of both of them in Call of Duty is really,
yeah,
really
cute. Yeah, it's funny. It's them in the car together.
Yeah.
Yep.
I hate that they younged up Tommy Chong.
Yeah.
But Cheech looks like his current age.
Yes, exactly. They loosened him up just a little bit, and the other one, he's got, like, in bags under his eyes.
Yeah. Poor Cheech Marin.
Cheech Marin don't care. He's getting that money.
I wish they'd have just brought him to Fortnite, because that's the game I play.
Yeah, that would make more sense.
I've tried Call of Duty.
I don't think...
It's not my thing.
Don't think that Fortnite and 420 go together.
I don't know. There's
supposed to be for children.
There's bananas and hamsters walking around and Family Guy characters.
I mean,
so
that's true, but they can probably get away with talking about smoking weed or something like that in this game.
More than likely.
Not so much in the other game, but apparently you can still listen to Disturbs Down with the Sickness.
You can.
Including the part
including the part in the middle.
The swearing's gone.
Right.
I told somebody that yesterday.
But if you're playing on the vocals, you have to hit buttons in time with the... Why don't you just die? Why don't you just die? It's so silly.
Never stick your hand on my face again, you... Yeah, not... It's weird.
So a pair of Marvel games were announced in the last week, and both of them came out of absolutely nowhere. Like, I had no idea these were being made, much less coming out. One of them is going to be an Overwatch-style 6v6 shooter, third person, called Marvel Rivals. That's going to be coming out from NetEase Games. So it sounds like the kind of thing that, like, isn't going to last very long.
Yeah.
But it's interesting because they have a lot of very different characters in there, including Storm and Magneto.
Mm-hmm.
And there was...
Luna Snow and Magic.
Okay, so Magic is Ileana Rasputin.
Okay, got it.
So those are my X-Men that are in there right there. Penny Parker is in there.
Mm-hmm.
From the Spider-Verse.
Yeah.
But it's the Evangelion version of Penny Parker, mm-hmm, from the comics.
Yes.
Instead, which is really, like, when I was watching the trailer and I saw the robot, I was like, that looks like the Eva robot from the Spider-Verse comic.
Right.
And then when they started flashing characters, they flashed her character and I had to stop it because it flashed so quickly to see, like, where is her name?
Mm.
Who is this?
Yeah.
You can also play Rocket, and one of the cool things is you can combine powers with each other. So if there's a Groot, you can climb up on top of him and then shoot off from his shoulder.
That's great.
Yeah, so...
Luna Snow?
Luna Snow, I have no idea. Oh. Luna Snow is a healing character because there's not a lot of healing characters.
Gotcha. Okay.
So...
It was like most of those names I knew except that one.
Yeah, Luna Snow is kind of a weird one to me, too. But it looks interesting. I'll try it. For sure.
Yeah. I mean, is it a phone game or is it a...
That's the question, really. I think it's going to be on the PC. Yeah, it's coming to the PC.
Gotcha. Okay.
So it'll be very interesting to see if it's... testing starts in May, the closed beta test. So if you have closed beta tests and I'm interested, if you listen it. The other game that they dropped a trailer for, I was funny because I was talking to the guy at my local comic store. He thought it was a movie that was coming out, but it's called 1943, The Rise of Hydra.
Hmm.
And it's a kind of an action game like the Spider-Man games or Avengers or something, but you get to play as Captain America or T'Challa's dad as the Black Panther in World War II, along with an American soldier and a one of the Dora Milaje.
Sweet.
I think that's what they're called. I can't remember.
I wouldn't know how to pronounce it properly.
Right.
I did find out the other day, by the way, that there is a rap group named Hydra.
Really?
Yeah.
There used to be a series, a couple of rappers that went by the name The X-Men.
Oh, really?
And they had to change it. They got the cease and desist and went, all right.
No, this is like a collective that's called Hydra. And then Lucy, who I worked with this weekend, is part of that, but then had something to do with, like the last thing that she put together had something to do with a Cerberus. And I was like, that's really fitting for being under Hydra. And she's like, oh my God, they all have them.
Are you revealing on this podcast that you are a Hydra sympathizer?
No. Not like actual Hydra.
Not like that.
Not like that.
Like Marvel's Hydra.
I'm still, I know there's an explanation for it, but I'm still confused as to why Red Skull was on that freaking planet when Clint and Natasha show up.
Oh, because he was fucking with Infinity Gems, man.
But I'm just saying, like, he gets banished here and he's just like, nah, I'm just a Red Skull hanging out on this planet.
Yep,
that's it. By myself.
Yep, that's all. That's what you get. It's what you get for messing with them.
I feel like it's such a dumb way of setting that up, but continue.
Did you see the trailer for the next Star Wars? It's called The Acolyte.
Yes.
Comes out in June.
Do you think I could have gotten through the first day with being friends with Tony and Mike?
I'm sure they shared it with you. It was
send it to me.
Just a matter of if you'd actually like stopped and watched.
Oh yeah, no, because he said Carrie Ann Moss in a Star Wars. Yes, and I'm like, yeah, I need that.
Yeah, that'll
I
be
need her in anything.
That'll be pretty cool. And actually, so I joked that you were going to get us canceled because you were sympathizing with Hydra. There is a YouTube show called Cartoonist Kayfabe, and it's run by two guys that do comic books. One of them, his name's Ed Pisker. He is in the midst of a cancellation because some text came out that he was exchanging with a 16-year-old when he was 40, where he was inviting her to come to his house in Pittsburgh and like crash on the couch. And calling her a naughty girl, which is really the worst of it.
Yeah.
It's not like there's multiple women that said, yeah, he flirted with me too when I was underage, but there's no like hard evidence of like, oh, that was, you did something completely inappropriate other than flirting with an underage woman online.
Okay.
So it's in the process of happening.
Gotcha. That was a weird segue that you related me to a creep. Being canceled.
That
was a weird segue.
I wanted to bring it up because it's happened in the past 24 hours, yes. And I think it's a story that's important to follow if you're in the comic book realm.
Yes.
But yeah, so that's happened.
I just had to say, like, you went from that to that real, like, it was weird.
You know that little play date machine that Telka got me back in, she sent me back in October? During a conference, the co-founder of the company revealed that two pallets of Playdates just disappeared from the shipping factory in Las Vegas. Said there was around $400,000 worth of the little machines.
Oh, goodness.
Said they've been having some real problems with them. They lost two pallets, and then they lost a third one.
Mm.
That third one ended up next door to the shipping place. And they were like, we'll go get it. And
yeah.
There were pictures of it, like, out in the rain.
It's so weird. I was like, they got any playdates on Temu? Because I think I know where they came from.
That's what I was thinking when I was reading about it. I was like, I feel like you could probably narrow it down to whatever the serial numbers were on a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
And then just start looking on eBay.
Right.
You could figure out probably fairly quickly who got them, who's got your pallets. You're missing pallets of playdates. And the last thing I wanted to bring up is that we completely missed a Twitch meta that we could have been utilizing. A couple of weeks ago, Twitch streamers discovered that if they wore green screen, like stretch pants or bras or shirts or something like that, they could stream the game on themselves. So there were a lot of ladies that were streaming their game on their own ass, playing like Fortnite or stuff like that. But now Twitch has said that no more of that. No more buttocks, groin, or breasts. Won't allow content that lingers on any of those potty parts anymore.
Well, they're the ones that let people do hot tub streams. This is their fault.
Fair.
I will be mad at you forever, Twitch. This was it. Twitch was supposed to be a place where, like, artists and creatives were supposed to, like, share, you know, their stuff and be nerds and have a place that was nerd-oriented where we didn't have to deal with hot people.
And then hot people discovered
that. Hot people discovered it and ruined it. So screw you, hot people.
How dare you?
How dare you be hot on the internet on every platform? I wanted one platform where I could be ugly. You ruined it.
That's all I had for news. So I think that's a good...
News is I'm ugly. All right.
I mean, by association in that particular thing, I guess that means I'm ugly too.
We both ugly.
We both ugly. And we'll be right back with Dirk Manning. Welcome back, everyone, to the Really Big Fan Podcast. And it's an exciting week for me because I get to talk to a guy who I get to talk to a couple of times with my previous podcast. But this is a first for the Really Big Fan Podcast. So I'm really interested to talk to him about something he is a really big fan of. And the person we're talking to is the comic book author and former music journalist, Dirk Manning. Welcome to the show, Dirk.
So it's been nice to you know, get to chop it up with you for a minute. Congratulations on all the very cool stuff you have going on right now. Thank you for having me on.
Absolutely. We've been kind of in the hunt to see, you know, who have we not reached out to and done that trope of like, hey, I've got a podcast, you want to be on it? And
yeah, we don't want to always be known as the guy with the podcast,
right?
Like pushing it, but you know, we want to talk to people, and this is actually time-stamped as a year, so anniversary of a year.
That's
weeks.
True. Yeah, as of today, it's said on Facebook.
We're on the one-year anniversary episode
right
of this.
Right.
Well, I, you know, and to be fair, you know, for people that have heard me on a lot of other podcasts, I tend to do a ton of podcasts about, like, my comic book work, things like
sure.
that. You know, I'll be the shills. I'm running a Kickstarter right now for a Native American werewolf Western comic called Homestead. You can check out homesteadcomic.com. Hopefully you won't cut that part out.
No.
I want you guys to promote yourselves on here.
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Well, yeah, homesteadcomic.com. It's real. It ends April Fool's Day. So normally when I come on podcasts, I'm talking about my comic work. And when you and I start talking about you doing this podcast about like things that people are real big fans of, I jumped at the opportunity because to get to talk about something totally different than what I normally talk about. So thank you for this opportunity.
Absolutely. That's really when we started the podcast. That's what we were like, everybody is a huge fan of something. And it's fun to talk to people about stuff that they're big fans of and find out like where their journey, where they first clued into it, how long they've been a fan, all that good stuff. So, I guess let's get it rolling. You chose the topic of the lead singer of both Mr. Bungle and Faith No More, along with 20,000 other side projects, Mike Patton, who me and you are both pretty big fans of. Where did you first see or experience Mike Patton?
I first discovered Mike Patton, I think, like most people of my age especially did, when Faith No More put out their album, The Real Thing. And I, you know, lifelong fan of music, especially heavy music and things like that. We've also always been kind of like a weird kid now to a weird adult, you know, I guess. And a lot of people first heard, you know, Discover Faith No More from the song Epic, you know, the rap metal song, which was incredible, blew up on MTV and stuff like that. It's like, whoa, this is like combining like the Forbidden Fruits, you know, and you have other bands around that era, like Suicidal Tendencies and stuff like that, that kind of dabbled this little bit. Anthrax, obviously. Faith No More went all in on it and is largely credited with, obviously, creating the genre of nu metal. But to me, as cool as that song was at the time, and still is, I loved that every song on the album was a totally different genre.
Yeah.
Right? You know, there's like a smooth jazz to a rap rock to like a speed metal song. And I always kind of entertained in my mind the idea that if I ever took my love of music into doing something like a band, I always said I'd want to do like nothing but EPs and like the ska EP, the metal EP, the jazz, you know, the blues. It, to be fair, completely out of my range of talent, but I thought that'd be such a cool thing to do for like every album to be just something totally different. And then here, this band with this really good singer and this great backup band did that on an album. They literally did basically a different genre of music on every song. And I became an instant fanboy. I started to dive deeper down the Mike Patton rabbit hole from there. Then, you know, he
all kind of us, parlayed that. All of us saw the Mr. Bungle t-shirt in the Epic video and went,
yes,
that?
Yeah, I need to know what that is, right?
Yep.
And then when he parlayed that into the first album on Warner Brothers, you know, produced by John Zorn, you know, you go to the record store, the Get the Day comes out, you go back and you play the tape, and it's just like, what the hell is this?
It's the wildest shit you've ever heard.
Yeah, it's like evil acid jazz carnival music.
Yep.
And it's just insane. It's funny, even like 10 years ago, another mutual friend of ours, Tony Maiello, I played it for him for the first time. And he was like, what is this? Yeah. He was like, oh, because if you never heard it, I mean, even to this day, it just wrecks you.
I don't know that I've played any of that first Mr. Bungle record for you, but it's just like circus music from the ninth layer of hell.
Oh, yeah. No, you just described it to me before. Yeah. So I knew what it was. Because remember, Sam applied the photograph that and you went, Sam likes Mr. Bungle?
Right.
I'm confused.
And that's the wild thing is that Mr. Bungle has three albums on Warner Brothers. And the first one is wild circus music. And the second one is nothing like that.
Yeah.
Totally avant-garde. Insanity.
And then the third one is like
Beach Boys tribute almost.
Yeah, like a jazz record.
And I think you ended up asking her when you saw her, like, which album was it that got you into Mr. Bungle?
Yeah.
I really wanted to know.
Yes, they were as much as Faith No More would cross genres from song to song, Mr. Bungle was more conceptual of like, they started as like a heavy, heavy band and then did like these weird ska demos that led into the evil circus music that led into, you know, each album was like its own monster.
Oh, man.
Yes. Like almost sounded like a different band, even though the core members were always the same. And I was just wrecked. I was going on the rabbit hole of Mike Patton at that point. You know, I'm getting like the weird like adult themes for voice albums he did. And, you know, and back then, the internet, you know, this time was even still in its infancy. So, like, finding this stuff, then there are these rumors, like, oh, is he really the lead singer of Brujia or something like that? Or whatever, you know, these crazy rumors you hear and things like that. I remember seeing the Mr. Bungle video for the song Ridge Called Travolta, quote unquote, on like some late night cable access show, like Clowns and Nooses and stuff like that.
Yeah.
That's how I discovered the comic book "Beautiful Children," "Beautiful Stories for Ugly Children."
I was going to mention that I actually somebody had introduced me to the issues, the Mr. Bungle issues of that, and I went on and found the rest of the series, loved it.
Yeah, it's kind of like a comic book. It's like an illustrated, it's in comic book format, but it's like an illustrated series that is Beautiful Stories for Ugly Children. And just
these new, very dark, like grim fairy tales, kind of modern fairy tales.
Yeah. Because the Mr. Bungle kind of, I don't know if they ever, I've never, you know, all these years I've never looked if I actually got permission to use that.
I know it's in the, when you fold the CD out, like there are panels directly from that comic.
Right.
I don't know if they actually got permission for it.
I don't know. That's a good question. But yeah, I loved it because Mike Patton was this guy who was just, he really was able to parlay the bounce he got from Faith No More.
Yeah.
Not only to Mr. Bungle, but then be able to just do all this other crazy stuff. And he's admitted over the years, part of it was kind of like an anti-authority thing that he was doing. Like he didn't want to be the poster boy. He didn't want to be, you know, like the teen Vogue or Tiger Beat or whatever, you know, pinup guy. And he actually lashed out of that pretty majorly at times.
Oh yeah. But like they
was about the music.
They were the opening band for the Metallica Guns N' Roses megatour in the 90s. And they would go out there and purposely rile the crowd up because the crowd was waiting for one or both of the other bands. They'd be like, well, fuck you, we're going to play a song for 20 minutes. We're just play one
right,
song
right.
over
we're
and
gonna
over
play
again.
The Nestle Easy theme, right? Or
right.
Whatever, you know. And well, even when Angel Dust then came out, their album after The Real Thing, which was very much a commercial success, Angel Dust again was like a like the needle dragging off the record from what they did before. You know, it's like you got songs.
Angel Dust is really where you start to get like a country song followed by a heavy metal song followed by a pop song.
And some of the themes of the album were definitely sets it. You know, and you read interviews of producers for Angel Dust and said, "We hope you didn't buy houses."
Yeah.
Right. You know, because they're like, yeah. But that became like one of the most defining records of its generation. You know, these bands talk about how that album was like, holy crap.
Yeah. It turned into this thing where if there was a band that you liked in the 2000s, one of their favorite bands was probably Faith No More. Like you get bands like Alhead and Cambria or the Deftones or even the Stone Age to a degree.
Yeah.
They'd ask you what's your favorite record, and they'd immediately say Faith No More, Angel Dust.
Right. Right. And then Korn named one of their riffs the Bungle Riff.
Yep.
Right. And all that. And I remember seeing, you know, being in Detroit, you go to a lot of concerts in Detroit as well, seeing the Snowcore tour with System of a Down and Mr. Bungle. And I remember Serge at one point, you know, when he was shouting out the band, he said Mr. Bungle. So people kind of like, you know, because Bungle was doing their crazy stuff.
Right.
And he's like, you guys understand. He goes, we are here because of Mr. Bungle. It's like, they paved the way for System of a Down.
Yes.
You know, they're giving them their flowers, you know. But I just became such a fan of Patton for two reasons. One, because of the sheer amount of diversity of work he did. I knew ultimately, even back then, I wanted to be a writer and get involved in writing comics and stuff like that. And I loved the fact that he was just doing all these different subgenres of work under, I guess, kind of like an alternative, I guess, umbrella largely. Mm-hmm. But I also really got to love the fact that he, and again, this is kind of like Dirk Manning DNA, right? He did not make it about himself as much as he might have made it about the music, which was one of my big reasons when I started publishing as an author. I used the now, you know, famous my Jim Franco right there, you know, my Dirk Manning image with the guy at the top and the scarf, because one, I didn't want my brand to be married to any one series I wrote, but two, I didn't even want it to be about this. I wanted it to be about like the product.
Yeah.
Right. And Patton was always real big on that. Make it about the product. Make it about the music. Don't make it about me. Don't make it about, I'm not the celebrity here. I want this to be about the music. And that just really spoke to me and really became, I don't want to say made it okay because I would have done it anyway, but it really affirmed to me, I guess, or reiterated to me the important that it's okay to follow that path. Right. Now, of course, the irony with Mike Patton is, and again, I'm here as a real big fan, so I can own this too. His withdrawal from the press and not doing interviews, not when I talk about stuff, or being just a total jackass,
right,
only added to the mystique of him.
That's one of the things is when you do see an interview with Mike Patton, he's very prickly.
Mm-hmm. For years and years and years, recent years, I know he's kind of come around now a little bit more. He's like, you know, he's getting older. He's like, yeah, whatever. I was kind of a douchebag at the time,
right?
But go back to your introduction, I discovered him in like junior high and, you know, became obsessive fan of all the stuff Pat was doing, following him all over the place, you know, his music. And I knew I wanted to write comic books, but in college, I got into music journalism because I was still really kind of discovering my voice and I wanted to write. I could get paid to write that way. And the Mount Everest for me was always not interviewing Metallica, because all kind of people interviewed Metallica.
Sure.
But ultimately, it was like, man, I can find a way to meet Mike Patton, the guy who does not do interviews. Holy crap. And I was like that much of a fan. And I think in a certain way, I loved covering local music and stuff like that. And I loved covering the bands who come through the Midwest, working with bands like Korn when they were coming up. And, you know, your ICPs, your Marilyn Manson's, Kid Rock, stuff like that. And, you know, that whole wave of creators, but Mike Patton was like the white whale out there.
Yeah.
And I finally got a chance to meet him in person and interview him, which was like the wildest thing. And it will just, it's a thing that actually, well, I don't want to give away the ending, but yeah, it was, getting to meet Mike Patton was like one of those like defining moments of my life, you know, getting to meet him in my career. I went to go see Mr. Bungle and Dillinger Escape Plan in Detroit at St. Andrews. And this was July of 99. And I had a press pass. Again, you know, Bungle wasn't doing interviews or things like that, but I was taking pictures for the magazine I wrote for. And I'm thinking, and, you know, St. Andrews, you guys know, small club, right? Real small.
Right.
And the press pass allowed me to kind of stay near the stage after the show was over, and security's herding everybody out. And I just kind of kept creeping towards the stage. And Patton's up there breaking down his mic rig and stuff like that. And we still like 15 feet away. Well, next thing you know, the guys in the band start hand me some equipment. Like,
guess what? You're a roadie now.
They think I'm a roadie. So I go, I kind of put it down. And next thing you know, I'm unloading Mr. Bungle stuff off the stage. And the whole time I get a fan, right? The whole time I'm like one eye on Pat, who's breaking his shit down and stuff like that. Boom, boom, boom. Now, and I had an in, Chuck. I had a secret. I knew that Patton would not want to talk about Faith No More, wouldn't even really talk about Mr. Bungle. He had just started a record label called Epicac.
Right.
And I thought, I have one chance. If I can get in front of him and say, I'd love to talk to you about your new record label. Right. So that was I had this grand design. I sound like such a stalker now, almost got it. I wanted to land the interview, right? You know, to meet, so boom, boom. So then here I am, literally unloading Bungle stuff onto the floor, right? Because I don't know where to take it, right?
Right.
Just like a pile where other stuff was. And finally, Patton, you know, finishes up. He jumps off stage and starts heading towards the side. And I run over and go, pardon me, sir. I go, would you mind signing my ticket stub real quick? He's like, yeah, man. And I go, and by the way, signing it. And I go, and by the way, I actually, you know, do a lot of music journalism. I can see him start to like, you know, think
yeah,
public.
Yeah.
I go, I'd like to talk to you about Epicac. He goes, oh. He goes, right now. He goes, yeah, we can do that. Now, mind you, this was in July. And he goes, we're going to be back in Detroit in October. And he gives me, this is the old days, right? He gives me this phone number. He goes, this is my manager. Call him. Tell him that I give you this number and I want to set an interview and I'll talk to you about Epicac when I come back in October. And I'm like, so then it goes right. Like,
it worked.
Number, right? So the next day, get home. And again, I'm old, calling long distance, right? For those of you young people out there, back then you had to like pay extra to call people if they lived far away.
Right.
That was a thing, right? So I call and his manager's like, how do you even get this number? And I said, Mike Patton, give me this number, sir. I'm supposed to talk to my Epicac, blah, blah, blah. And he goes, I'll call you back. Bam, slams down the phone, like rings on my hand. I'm like, oh God. So I'm still living at, unless I'm still living at, yeah, I was still living at home at the time. So now here I am, fan of Mike Patton for years, just got off the phone with his manager, still living at home, sitting by the phone with the cord, sitting on the, you know, the wall mount,
yep,
waiting for Mike Patton's manager to see if he's going to call me back. Right? That was before you call or I do anything. My 10 minutes later, the phone rings again. My mom goes, I'm like, no! Right the phone. Like, hello? You'll be telling, hello? Try to settle a professional. He goes, yeah, okay, we're clear. He goes, here's what's going on. He goes, they're going to be playing at this place. You know, he goes, Clutch Cargos, Pontiac, that's by Detroit, Halloween night. We'll get you set up. You can do an interview before the show. So what ended up happening was I ended up doing a separate interview with Trey from Mr. Bungle. Then I would do a separate interview with Patton about Epicac.
Nice.
That's kind of how it ended up lining up. Like, okay, no problem. So I get there, I do the interview with Bungle. And they tell me that, like, sure enough, like, the original album, they had to change the first song title from Travolta to quote-unquote, because they, like, those are the Scientologists that said, yeah, the Black Helicopter came down to Warner Brothers Studios, blah, blah, blah. Like, yeah, ha, ha, ha. Now, years later, I'm like, maybe
that
so.
That might not have been a joke.
Yeah. So then Patton comes down, and he was drawing on his body with a marker. Like, what the hell is he doing? And I said, what's going on? And he tells me, he goes, we're performing his Red Hot Chili Peppers tonight. And I started laughing. He goes, no, I'm serious. You know, he was drawing like the tattoos.
The tattoos. The Anthony Kiedis tattoos. Oh
my God. Yeah. And the Mr. Bungle, for those fellow Patton fans out here, the Clutch Cargo Show 1999. Is infamous because they did, in fact, perform as the Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yeah, I think they opened like the first two or three songs.
Yeah, and then they went back to stuff later. They had the Ghost of River Phoenix on stage. And
didn't the Chili Peppers get real butthurt about that and like get them kicked off the tour or something?
That's what prompted this, because Chili Peppers put out their album Californication.
Right.
Mr. Bungle put out California.
Ah.
And, depending who you believe, the Chili Peppers really butthurt about Bungle's album being called that, and they said they don't agree with it. But for years, Anthony Kiedis claims that Mike Patton ripped off his style.
Ah, okay.
Look, I don't know. I'm not there, but, you know, you got Anthony Kiedis like, and then you got Mike Patton with, like, what, 6.5 octave range or whatever the hell it is, you know?
Right.
Like, this god of vocals, you know, and I'm like, that's a tough pill for me to swallow, man.
So what I'm learning about this is the Red Hot Chili Peppers actually think they own California.
That's what it appears.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah. Apparently so, right? You know. And he's like, oh yeah, they ripped off Epic. They, you know, he was ripping me off, blah, 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 blah. Like, so yeah, there was some heat. But then apparently what Mike Patton was telling me in the interview was and the Chili Peppers got them kicked off of a tour, of like some radio festival tour or something, or some
right
sort of thing that they were going to be on. So this was them getting back on Halloween. They dressed up and they performed the Chili Peppers. They had the Ghost of River Phoenix on stage and stuff like that. And long story short, I got to interview Mike Patton. And I have very few pictures of myself, especially from this era, but I always keep this right above my desk.
Oh, that's sweet.
There's young Dirk Mann. You tell, I'm like a wooden, like frozen, and of course,
yeah.
Like,
you know, you're trying to look tough, but you can see in your face that you were I'm just trying not to smile,
but I'm like, oh god, I'm freaking out. I have like a Hard Rock Cafe shirt because I didn't want to wear a band shirt. Yeah. I didn't want to look like a fan of anything like that. You know,
understand.
And I did the interview with Mike Patton, and that was the last. For all intents and purposes, that was the last thing I ever did as a music journalist before then saying, I climbed Mount Rushmore. It is now time to...
Right. What's left after that? Yeah.
Well, I started my comic writing career. And I launched Nightmare World, which will be a show again.
You're right.
I just celebrated its 20th anniversary in print.
Nice.
Yeah.
And you've done a whole bunch of comics, like with the titles of albums or songs.
Yeah.
You did a whole series of, I think, Nine Inch Nails songs, didn't you?
I did. Yeah, I've done two. It's funny because now over the years, Nightmare World, every story in Nightmare World is named after a song because I'm bad at titles. And it was kind of like a throwback to my music love and my music journalism roots. But then since then, I've done two stories for anthologies for the band Nine Inch Nails. I've been nominated for the Ringo Award in comics twice for the comic book I wrote with or write with Twisted out of Detroit.
Right.
You know, so it's weird how over the years my fandom of music and then my fandom of comics have continued to kind of evolve and grow and weave together. But look at that picture right now. You know, getting to meet Patton was the thing that I was like, I'm done. I can go to a comic shop because I enjoyed a lot of success as a music journalist.
Yeah.
And it was fun and I'm getting paid to like meet the bands I like and hang out with them. Right. But that was the moment for me, like, Dirk, you've done it.
Yeah.
What's left?
Right.
Maybe I could interview Metallica someday, whatever, who cares? All kinds of people meet Metallica. Screw that. I did an interview with Mike Patton.
Well, it's cool that you got to talk to him and he was cool with you because, like you said, you brought up his record label, which he's very passionate about. Similarly, how we do with this podcast, bring up something that people are very passionate about in the hopes that we can have a fun conversation.
That's the name of the game. And I'll tell you one other thing about that very thing. One of the first releases on Epicac I hope I don't mangle the name of this, but it was like the Rainbow School Boys Choir, I think it was called. And it was this, it was a album of a choir for students with intellectual disabilities. And that was one of their first releases. And as we've established, Patton can be kind of a nonconformist and kind of a antagonistic, shall we say, during the time. You know, I was real curious about this because I did a lot of work with students, young adults and stuff who were developmentally delayed, intellectually disabled. And that part of me has had to know, and I'm like, what's he getting at here? It's like,
right.
Because that's a joke. It's really not a funny one.
Right. With this album, are we laughing at them or are we laughing with them?
Yeah. And you're right. And laughing at all really kind of bothered me. So I also had this weird thing going in there where I'm like, I didn't want to, like, I'm a super fan of Patton, but I also, like, I'll have a bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah.
You know, and so I brought it up and I was real cool. But I said, you know, we talked for a bit and we talked about the label and stuff. And I said, yeah, so, you know, your first album is this one. And I'll tell you, friends, his eyes lit up. And he's like, I know. And he goes, it is so awesome. He goes, when you talk about the purity of music, and he goes, those kids get out there, man, and he goes, and they just sing, and it's about the music, and that's all it's about. He goes, it's just the most purest distillation of just music for the sake of music. He goes, that's what I wanted to do with the label. That's the first thing I wanted to put out, something that just, maybe it's not what people expect, but this is just a pure celebration of music. And my heart was just like,
yeah,
you know, just like two or three sizes too big, right? Yeah. Like,
that was the answer you hoped for.
Yeah, I never expected it, right? But I'm like, I didn't think I could fanboy anymore. And I was kind of like feeling like guilty about it. And he was totally into it. He's totally legit about it. He's, I mean, you can't fake that passion he had.
Yeah.
About, and again, though, you see there's a through line to everything he does, that he wants it to be about the music. And he discovered this boys choir at the school, and he wanted to get their music out there so everyone could just see the joy of music for the sake of music.
And that's what I read about Ipecac Recordings, is that was his like whole thing when he was like, I'm going to make my own record label, was that I'm going to find music that other record labels just wouldn't put out. And I'm going to, like, they sign people to one record deals, so they don't own them. They don't, you know, it's not like I own your soul for the rest of eternity or anything. It's like, no, I want to find music that no one else would actually commit to record, and then spend the resources to commit it to record so that it exists all over. And that's really cool.
And it's something that I carried with me in my comic career too, because I write but I don't draw. And even starting, you know, Nightmare World, my first series that launched out a 21-year career, it was like, what do you like to draw? Like, you draw beautiful women and monstrous tentacles? I will give you a beautiful woman and monstrous tentacle story. You like to draw dragons? I'll give you dragons. You like to draw this? I'll give you this. But that idea of, like, let's put something out there that we can both really get behind and be passionate about. And, you know, you date before marriage, right? And if this goes well, we like this, we'll do another one. We'll do another one. And just that tapping into that true collaborative nature of comic books, but also, and I'm not trying to shill here, but with Nightmare World, every story in the book's a different genre of horror. And again, that's a huge patent thing, right? Let me show all the different stuff that I can do, the different stuff I can enjoy.
Right.
But also why I love horror so much. I'm a huge horror fan as well. And I love it because you can do funny horror, you can do romantic horror, you can do scary horror, you can do wolfmen, you can do zombies, you can do ghosts, you can do, you name it, pick. And you could plug it all into that umbrella and still make this cool, cohesive thing. And admittedly, in my comic book rank career, I really established myself as a horror guy for a long time. But then as I went on and I started to get my legs under me and people started to recognize what the brand Dirk Bangs was as a creator, I'm like, okay, now I can do, you know, like the all ages horror book. Or now I can do the superhero book. Or now I can.
How convenient that you had that right under the camera there.
Well, sadly, it really was just sitting on my desk. I'm trying to find like other ones, and like I it would be very orchestrated at that point.
Right.
But I'm good. I'm not that good, Judge. But I could, again, this is something I took from Patton about Patton himself, and again, perhaps to his own dislike, became, I don't say the attraction, but like the brand, right?
Yeah.
But like Mr. Bungle, like, well, that's Patton's band. And he's like, are you kidding me? I have some of the most talented musicians in the world are in this band. And he
that's
would
the
try
wild
to actively
thing. That's pull the wild thing about all the stuff
it.
He does is that they couldn't do it the way they do it if they were bad at doing it. Like, it's very easy to listen to him, some of Mr. Bungle stuff or even some of the other stuff Mike Patton does and be like, oh, this is garbage. But like, it's not. It's, well, it's orchestrated, it's planned, and if you were bad at it, you wouldn't be able to do it the way you're doing it.
Fantomas is a perfect example of that, right? It's this really choppy, almost violently fast, but meticulous, super tight, Dillinger Escape Plan-ish kind of metal and sometimes even like just sonic experimentation. But you're exactly right. You have to be a maestro to be able to do what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because over the years, Patton tried to pull himself away from that a little bit and said, look, I'm in a band with, you know, King Buzzo from the Melvins, Dave Lombardo from Slayer. But his brand kind of transcended all that because people like me who are such big fans of Patton, like, I'm not going to get Secret Chiefs 3. It's the Mr. Bungle guys without Patton. I mean, it's cool. I've seen him at concert. It's fascinating. But it doesn't geek me up as much as I Patton's doing something right.
Sure.
You know,
sure.
But,
that was the other thing that was wild about Faith No More is not only that like a 12 song album would have eight genres in it, but that every member of Faith No More looked like they were in the wrong band. Like they looked like they should have been in a different band with people that look like them instead. Like when Jim Martin was in Faith No More, you saw him in the Bill and Ted movie, in the big black curly hair and the sunglasses.
Right, the red glasses. Yeah.
That guy is with a shirtless Mike Patton. And then you've got the bass player who looks like he's the drummer. You got the
dreadlocks. Right. Mike Blurt.
Like they all five of them look like that's not a band. That's just five people.
Yeah. And they had a lot of tension in real life, too.
Yeah.
You know, which is interesting. Again, such a geek. I actually read the biography of Faith No More, you know, because they're such this fascinating band and this fascinating moment in history, and they did so much, you know. And even before that with Chuck Mosley, who ironically I got to meet in Detroit at a show for Dead Cross.
Yeah.
Chuck Mosley showed up and I met him about a month or so before he passed. So it was also really weird for me to get to meet the lead singers.
Right.
Well, I never met Courtney Love. Courtney Love sang for Faith No More for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
But I to meet the both lead singers of my favorite band. But yeah, they even with Chuck and then with Mike, there was a tension in that band too. Mm-hmm. And they just kind of pushed all that energy forward.
Yeah, they used it in their creative juices in order to make very interesting music.
Yeah. And as a writer, you know, I always joke that writing is not a job, it's a curse, right? You know, and if people were happy, they wouldn't write, at least me. You know, it's like, I'm happy. I have nothing to write about. So taking that tension and you know, kind of like Street Fighter, you know, like how do can I get forward and putting it into a thing? My fandom of Mike Patton is imprinted the DNA. My DNA as a creator, right? But then still past that, I love to be able to sit back and put in Tomahawk, put in Mr. Bungle, put in the Dillinger Escape Plan album he did. Or, you know, Mondo Kanye or whatever. Amazing, amazing talent. Incredible. And again, to get to meet him and get past kind of that image he put forth.
Yeah.
And get to talk to him about creation and honoring the art for what it is and putting the art forward really left a huge, huge, huge imprint on me as a creator as I went forth to create comics and write comics. And I'm just very grateful I got to meet him. And it sounds weird to say, but I'm grateful I discovered him. I was grateful that I got to become a big fan of his because it did really have such a massive, massive impact on my life as a writer. You know, it's just, I was very fortunate.
Do you have a favorite Mike Patton project?
Like, yeah. You know, it depends on, you know, I mean, Faith... Faith No More to me is, I think, one of the best bands of all time. We get stuck on the shirt here, even.
Yeah.
I really like a lot the album he did with Dillinger Escape Plan.
Yeah.
You know, I think that was a really great album as well. It's also different. When I saw him do Mondo Kanye live in concert on YouTube, I wish the album was as big and raw as like the live performances that they are, because I think that live Mondo Kanye stuff's incredible. But, and again, just the weird eclectic nonconformity of Mr. Bungle's incredible. But if I had to put my chip down,
yeah,
and if it makes me basic, so be it. I just Faith No More, man. Faith No More.
Well, that was cool stuff. A connected question to that. And I know I have my own answer to it, but because it's, music is subjective, if you had to introduce somebody that had never heard Mike Patton before, you had to introduce them to, you know, his kind of work, what do you think is the record you would pick?
I usually do this if someone's driving with me, they know they get subjected to like whiplash with my musical taste. And we start going down that Mike Patton rabbit hole, like, I'll play him four or five songs on four or five different albums and not tell it's all the same guy, is what I do. But man, you kill me if I had to pin him down on something.
See, for me, I think it's Angel Dust.
Yeah.
Because Angel Dust is, the real thing is more, it's definitely different, but it's, a lot of it is the same. And yeah. I think part of that is because a lot of it was written before he was even in the band. So he was just kind of coming in and finishing it off with the vocals. Whereas with Angel Dust, they had, at that point, they knew each other as a band. So they could really work off of that tension and that, like, well, you're a metal guy, but you're a funk guy. And I'm a, you know, and he likes punk rock. And
they got mad that he's singing so nasally because he didn't want to sound like he sounded Mr. Bungle.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, ultimately, and I hate to cop out, it depends on the person. There's some people who start on Kanye. There's some people who start them on Dead Cross.
Or Pete
That first Dead Cross album I love, man, you know. There's some people that would start them on The Real Thing. There's some people I'd start them on Angel Dust, you know, play Caffeine for them.
Yeah.
You know, just blow them away. I think standard music person who doesn't like anything too crazy or extreme, I would go King for a Day, Fool for a Lifetime.
You know what? I was just thinking of that, and that is the better answer. Because that one, once again, it's a little more, it's still got some weird moments, but it's more streamlined. It's more, it's not quite new metal, but it's that, you know, like, if you like song one, you're going to like songs two, three, five, six, seven, and, you know, like.
Yeah, and it's rocking, but it's got some slow stuff. It's got some, pardon the pun, epic stuff on it. It doesn't have Jim Martin, of course, but it's just a nice mainstream rock album that demonstrates the tip of the iceberg, what they're about.
Yeah.
But enough of the tip of the iceberg that you know there's a lot more under the water. Right? They got a country song kind of on there. But then they got this.
Ew. That's the one that's got the Spanish song on it, isn't it?
Yep. Here's how old school I am. Right, yeah. It's this one right here.
Nice.
I love my CDs. You know, I can't scratch that vinyl itch. I'll bleed to death.
I don't want to get too far off on a tangent, but I love that they reissued all of their old records with the B-sides and everything, like a second disc with all the B-sides and stuff.
Yes.
When it comes to 90s bands, that is my thing.
He was chastising me the other day for having a Radiohead playlist that had none of the B-sides on it.
I'm like, there's so many good songs you've not heard.
Yeah, like the B-side stuff on Angel Dust is, or I'm sorry, King for a Day. I was looking, I have my sign over here. The B-side stuff on King for a Day is like some of the best stuff, man. Like Absolute Zero and stuff like that. And the Gigi Allen cover.
Yep.
You know. But again, That Mike Patton thing, man, you pick that scab, you'll bleed to death. There's so much stuff out there. He's doing stuff with Sepultura, right? And they did something with Bjork. And then
that's actually a really good example of how varied Mike Patton is, and Faith No More to a degree, is the different songs they would play for covers. Like he said, one of the B-sides was a Gigi Allen song called I Want to Fuck Myself. Mm-hmm. But then in that same recording session, they did a version of I Started a Joke.
Oh, geez. Yep.
And it's amazing.
And it's incredible. Yeah. And then you hear him talk about Baccarat, and he's like, oh my God, dude, that's the man, right? And,
right.
And, I'm playing, and it's and yeah, he'll do Surprise, You're Dead, and then he'll do I Started a Joke or something like
that. Yeah, one of the live tracks have them doing Glory Box, the Portishead song.
Nice.
Yep. Yep.
Like, he's a poker face. Busting into it for like a minute.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just, huge fan because... The thing, too, is it all has a through line of Penn, right? Mm-hmm. There's a level of quality there. Even if we did Corpse Flower, right? That may not be everyone's thing, but it's a really incredible, smooth album, and the quality is there. You look at, like, Peeping Tom. Same thing. It's funny. I think one of his, I hate to say the term weakest albums, but album that maybe didn't get over as much as all the other ones was when he tried to do something really commercial and really poppy when he did Peeping Tom, you know, and
right.
He's got Norah Jones on there. He's got Dan the Automator and stuff like that, you know. But it's almost like when he tried to go mainstream, this is when it was maybe the least interesting.
Right.
But then he turns down to like Lovage, you know, Songs We Love Your Old Lady By, and it's just like, so. Yeah, I could talk for 5 hours about this and just keep going deeper and deeper down the hole of all the Prenzo Lorenzo, you know, Cooper with the Future, Adult Themes for Voice. And
it's cool to hear how his philosophy on music has affected your philosophy on your career. It's very cool.
It imprinted on me, and again, I don't want to say it justified it or validated it, but it was just like that reassurance that. Do your thing, but make sure that everyone knows it's still you.
Yeah.
Right. Again, like I said, when I did the superhero thing, I did an all ages book, or even when I do like a wrestling book or something like that. The goal of any creator is to do something that people will say, this may not be something I normally would get, but this guy did it. Right. And that's Mike Patton 101, right? I mean, the people that are fans of Mike Patton will buy it because it's Mike Patton. That's what I aspire to do as a creator, is that Dirk Bang's doing a superhero book? Okay. Dirk Bang's doing an all-ages book? Okay. Dirk Bang's doing a book about with a professional wrestler? Okay. Dirk Bang's doing a book with Twisted? Okay. And they read it, and then they end up thinking, wow, this is really good, and this opened my eyes to something I normally wouldn't read.
Yeah.
The goal. And again, I totally got that from Mike Patton. That really imprinted on my DNA as a creator. And now, you know, the fact that I've been able to, you know, through stuff I've done, like through the Right or Wrong book and stuff like that, help so many other creators get to do their own thing and pay that forward too. That all comes back to the man. It's right here, Mike Patton, the person I'm a big, big, big fan of.
Well, if people want to check out all the different things you're doing, Dirk, where can they find you online?
You can go to dirkmanning.com. That has my full bibliography, my upcoming conventions, things like that, or also on as well, Comic-Cons, things like that. Most social media of note, at Dirk Manning. Look for the picture of the guy at the top and the scarf. And if you want to check out my newest book, homestead.com, the campaign ends April 1st. No fooling. The Native American Western werewolf story that we've unlocked, like, 8 stretch goals on Kickstarter. And
nice.
That's a really fun book too. But people can just go to dirkmanning.com, check out my stuff, or social media at Dirk Manning. And thank you guys so much for having me on, getting to geek out about stuff like this. I don't go into shill mode for talking about the comics, but again,
I always tell him, I'm like, you know, I like talking to everybody, but also it's nice when you can talk to somebody that has something that they can promote, because then it helps you guys too. So
I appreciate that. And again, you know, just to get to chop it up about something I was such a fan of, and to get to be a fan, you know, as professionals, and you know this, you know, from the time that you were at the radio and stuff like that, sometimes as professionals, I don't say we're not allowed to be fans.
Sure.
But it gets tricky for us to get to exist as fans.
Yeah.
Right. So I really value this opportunity. I value this whole podcast, what you're doing, and letting people geek out about stuff like this and give me a give me a chance to sit here and be all giddy and talk about, oh, here's my pictures I made my band in 1999. You know, you
know. Well, I'm sure this won't be the last time we talk to you, Dirk. Thank you so much.
Appreciate you, my friends. Thank you.
That was a lot of fun. Thank you to Dirk Manning for hanging out with us in the Really Big Fan Pod. I have gone, since we did that interview, I have gone and he shared with us a Spotify playlist that's like all of Mike Patton stuff. And I went and I listened to one of the Tomahawk records, which I really, really liked. And then I started listening to Phantomas, which is the band he's in with like the guy from Slayer and whatnot. And that is super strange.
Oh, yeah.
Very strange.
I would totally believe that.
The songs on the album I was doing are called Page One and Page Two and Page Three. And they're not really like songs as much as they feel like musical sketches of just like different things that are going on. Reminded me a lot of some of the Mr. Bungle stuff that I've listened to. I could see where he was like, what if I did that, but like for a whole album?
Yeah, that makes sense.
So if you haven't experienced Mike Patton, definitely go and check out Faith No More, Mr. Bungle, and all of his projects. And as we mentioned, check out Dirk Manning. He's got a lot of fun comic book projects as well that he's in the works on. I keep thinking one of these days I'm going to see him on a Marvel book.
Yeah.
And I'm going to be like, I knew him way back when. How cool is that?
Well, what's his name? Fosgit, did you do something?
Jay's done a bunch of work for Marvel.
Yeah.
It's super cool. In fact, one of the cards in Marvel Snap is one of his Groot animations.
That's awesome.
Which I don't think he got like any residuals or anything for it, but I was just like, how cool is that? It's a little 3D version of a Jay Fosgit drawing.
Yeah.
I'd like to see Jay try his hand at maybe some horror.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if that's in him. It would be fun.
It would be the cutest horror book ever.
It really would be. All right, well, we're going to wrap up the show with our serotonin boost. Before we do, though, I want to mention that if you do watch us live on Twitch Wednesday nights, we are going to be kicking it back to 7:30 for the next couple of months because I'll be working until 7 on a Wednesday night. But we'll be here at 7:30 at twitch.tv/reallybigfanpod. And, of course, Really Big Fan Pod on all the social medias is where you can find us. Do you want me to tell you what your serotonin boost was this week?
Oh, you know what my serotonin boost is?
It wasn't last night?
I mean, like, in theory, but there was something more drilled down specific.
Okay.
I did have.
Okay, go ahead.
So, there's kind of twofold. So, something that people don't realize a lot, and I feel like I have to tell everybody this so it makes more sense, is that I only get 3 songs per artist to do what I do.
Sure.
People, for some reason, think I get to shoot the entire set.
Right, and that is not true.
It rarely happens. No, you get usually 3 songs. Sometimes it's less, sometimes it's more. Like, I've got one coming up in, like, 2 weeks where I only have 2 songs.
Mm-hmm.
And they let us know ahead of time.
What was, not to derail you too hard, but what was the band that you got, like, 5 songs? And you were like, oh, my God, was it the Smashing Pumpkins? Yeah, okay.
Pumpkins.
I thought so.
They allowed us to shoot 4 or 5 songs. And
yeah.
It was because we were so far back.
Right.
That they were like, okay, we'll give them a little extra time to get what they need. Because when you shoot that far back, everything looks the same. So last night I ended up photographing Fall Out Boy at Van Andel Arena, which is the Grand Rapids version of LCA. It has a little bit less capacity, but it's honestly like it's the right size.
Mm-hmm.
The LCA can sometimes be too big depending on what you do. The Van Andel Arena was really cool. I really liked it there a lot. But The headliner is, of course, Fall Out Boy, and then the direct support is Jimmy Eat World.
Mm-hmm.
So Jimmy Eat World I've photographed before, and Fall Out Boy was a new one, but I do really love both of those bands. And I got through both sets, and I was like, both of them were trying to kill me.
Yeah.
Because when I looked at, like, when I realized what was happening, I don't always get to hear my favorites in the photo pit, but it's getting to the point that because the bands that I love are, like, I have more knowledge about the back half of their catalog than the front. They're playing all the stuff I like in the beginning.
That's cool.
And so Jimmy Eat World starts with a praise chorus.
Excellent.
And I'm like,
I know that one.
Yes. Okay, cool. Second song, Big Casino.
Ooh.
What?
Very good.
Okay, cool. Third song, Sweetness. I basically
turned
in that Vince McMahon meme.
Yeah.
It was just like, oh.
One after another.
And I was like freaking out. Like, and you can see, so J-Meme was recording me, mm-hmm. and you can see me singing as I'm like walking back and forth because I'm just like jamming as I'm doing it, which is funny. And then when they did Fall Out Boy, like these aren't necessarily my favorites, but they're all ones I know. Is they started with one from So Long for Stardust called Love from the Other Side.
Isn't that
that's the title track.
Basically. Yeah, that's what I thought.
It's like the first single that they put out for this album. Second song was The Phoenix.
Okay.
So like that's a really prominent one. And then Sugar We're Going Down was the third one.
Nice.
And I was just like, no way. And the fact, like, I looked at the set list for Fall Out Boy just to make sure I didn't have the same problem that I did with My Chem. Because what happened with My Chemical Romance was that they did Foundations of Decay, and then they went into I'm Not Okay from that. And as soon as I'm Not Okay happened, I swear I blacked out.
Yeah.
I do not remember hearing it or seeing it. I was in like holy shit mode.
Yeah.
I just like right out. I like, I did my job. It wasn't like I was standing there.
Well, you
just,
have
like,
no memory of it.
No recollection of how it sounded. So I was like, I'm going to look at the set list just so I know what I'm going to hear when I'm there. But I didn't do it with Jimmy Eat World. And then I was just like, these are all my favorite ones.
They blew you away.
Yeah. And the fun part, which is the second half of this, is that both of them kind of did songs that I don't hear them typically do live either. Uh-huh. So Jimmy World ended up working in the song Work into their set list, which like they don't play as much. You know, it's off the album Futures, which I really attached to when it came out. Mm-hmm. So it was like I was just hoping they wouldn't play Kill because I would just start crying, like sobbing. But then as I was driving to the arena, I turned on one of the albums that like doesn't get enough credit from Fall Out Boy, and it's called Infinity on High.
Mm.
And like, there's not really like a this ain't a scene, it's an arms race is the biggest song off of that. And Thanks for the Memories.
Yep.
Those are the two most popular ones. So like, people don't really pay attention to the rest of the album, but there's a song called The Takeover, The Breaks Over, and it's in quotations. And so I listened, it's the second track on that album, and I just was listening to that album on the way there, and I was like jamming out, and I was like, they won't play anything else from this.
Right.
You know, I'm just having a good time, whatever. So with the arenas and amphitheaters here, we don't get to take our gear back to our seats, and we don't there either, but they at least let us go watch the show and they hold on to our gear for us.
That's cool.
So we were able to actually go watch the other sets, which was really nice. But we walked back to go put our stuff away, and as I'm walking back out, that song hits.
Oh, cool.
And I'm like, no fucking way. Like, yes, this is cool. Come to find out, it was the debut of that being on the tour.
Oh, fun.
It was weird that that was the thing I was listening to on the way there. And I was like, they're not going to play anything from this album except the top hits, you know? And I'm like, yes. So that was kind of like the double of it.
I feel like when we saw Silver Sun Pickups, there was a lot of that too. A lot of like, I don't know this song, where it seems like a deeper cut. I don't know why they're playing it. And then you see them play it live and you're like, oh, I love that song.
See, with them, it was more of like, I don't know any of the names of those songs.
Yeah.
Like, wait, I know this one. Wait, I know this one.
Yeah.
And I'm going like, oh, I just don't know their titles. So right. We looked at the set list. I'm like, I have no clue.
You don't know the titles to like so many other band songs, but the songs you do know the titles to are My Chem and Fall Out Boy. The bands
the
write an entire
ones.
Paragraph and call it the title.
When I will say this, that as I get older, I start to forget the exact order in which those words go.
Right.
So that's why I had to like look up the one on the Fall Out Boy album, because like I do not remember if Panic at the Disco is another one that does that constantly, and Lying is the Best Thing That You Can, I don't even remember it. Like, I'm trying, but like,
you know that when they write the set list, it's just like two words.
Yeah, it's just
like the two most recognizable words for everyone. But it would be really funny if you got a set list and it was all in really small print. Because so they could get the whole title in.
Lying is the Most Fun a Girl Can Have With Her Clothes On is what the song is called. And I can't even remember.
You can't remember
that
all
anymore,
that.
But like the difference between Martyrdom and I don't even know what the rest of these are.
Yeah.
I don't remember. But like they don't even fit on the screen.
Yeah.
But Fall Out Boy gets called out for that way more than Panic ever did. And Panic is the one that really had this problem.
Fall Out Boy's the bigger band.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Panic at the Disco has not been an actual band since the first album. It's just been Brendon Urie doing his solo thing and pretending like he has friends.
Wow.
So there's that. That's my thoughts on Panic at the Disco.
We will not be doing a Panic at the Disco episode anytime soon from the sounds of that.
If anybody does it, it'll be Alex.
I'm going to say there's a lot of stuff to choose from. We went and saw the Ghostbusters movie, and we didn't talk about that, but I think we both really enjoyed that.
I really enjoyed it. I think I enjoyed it more than you did.
I think you did, but I did. It's not that I didn't enjoy it.
Yeah.
It's that I have
you really
notes.
Liked that first one.
Yeah, I thought Afterlife was really good, and I really enjoyed that more, and there was stuff in this one that I would have notes about, but otherwise, it's not bad. It's a good Ghostbusters movie.
I think it's great.
Yeah.
I think that the first one leans heavy on the nostalgia in the sense of like having the ghost, and I am saying things like vaguely in case nobody's watched that, but like there's certain things that are in the first one that are very much playing on the nostalgia, including the villains and stuff.
Yeah,
this villain was cool because
it's cool because it was new. Yeah,
they've never done it before.
Yeah,
so I'm like that's fun to me. I walked out at one point to go to the bathroom and I missed like one of the Bill Murray cameos
right
of the movie, and I was a little like, shit, why did I go to the bathroom right then? I thought I was safe,
right?
But no, I enjoyed it, and I thought it was really fun, and I laughed a lot.
Yeah, it was a good time, and it was a good way to start off my week of spring break.
Right, exactly.
I've got off. It was like going to see a Ghostbusters movie.
You had that, and you got to have your street beat.
I could mention that we had went to go to Street Beat on Tuesday and got those cool vegan crunch wraps. They went a little heavy on the onions.
Yeah.
I'm still burping onion. It's been like 2 days.
Well, you're having more onion tonight, so.
Oh. Hey. Oh, but I think what I'm going to pick is X-Men 97.
Oh, yeah, that's been fun.
X-Men 97 has been like the first episode.
It's going to be Gambit in a crop top.
No, I mean, that's real good. I may start wearing crop tops this summer. Thank you, Gambit.
There you go.
Everyone, I'll have to look at my belly. But no, the first episode was a real good like, hey, it's the X-Men cartoon is back. And then the second episode is, and the third episode, which you haven't seen yet, they're doing this really cool thing where they're taking some of the biggest stories in X-Men lore and condensing them down and then combining them. Like I was telling you, like the second one is the trial of Magneto, and it's also the birth of it's Scott and Jean's son. And like those two things happen separate from each other. Kind of, or they would, you know, Storm getting depowered. Like, those are two completely separate stories that they found a really good way to merge together. And I saw that a lot in the third episode that I watched this afternoon. It's
like, I'm trying not to spoil either, but then that other person shows up at the end. Is that a whole other story?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So then it's like three stories in one, essentially.
Yeah. So, the story that we get in this week's episode, there's two different really major X-Men stories that are kind of like combined. And that's been really fun. And I think they've done a really good job of it. I've been telling people all week, it is the cartoon your memory tells you the original was, but it wasn't.
Yeah. That happens.
Yeah.
If like, you're an adult, if you are over 30, don't ever watch Space Jam again. Just remember that Space Jam was good and go with it.
Just remember that you liked Space
Jam. You really liked Space Jam, then you don't need to rewatch it.
But yeah, if you're an X-Men fan, if you're a fan of Marvel animation, it's worth it. It's worth checking out. And so it's been a good time every Wednesday.
Let me in a crop top. Let me in a crop top.
Well, hopefully we've been a good time for you on this Wednesday evening. We thank you for joining us, and we will be back next week with another really big fan pod. Make sure you're checking out our Patreon for our really big fan pod double feature podcast, the exclusive Patreon podcast where we talk about movies, and you also get ad-free versions of these episodes.
Sponsor your local artist today.
Yeah. We'll see you.
Cue the Sarah McLachlan.
Yeah, every time I see the words "Let's Go" typed anywhere, all I hear is Lil Jon singing over Crazy Train, going "Let's go."
There. If you want it, you can get me. Let me know.
Oh, my hair is terrible today.
Well, you did just wake up from sleep.
It's true.
Any burp into the microphone.
I'm a professional. I'm a podcasting professional. I'm great at podcasts.
Lou is just staring at you like, what?
Why are you yelling, Dad?
Why are you yelling?
Lou doesn't. This predates his life, but Lou, when you yell something, it's more true. Yeah.
Hello.
So when you yell, nobody loves you in the middle of the night because you just want us to come pick you up and take you to bed, you're actually making it more true.
Rude. This poor cat. He is so loved, and yet he's verbally abused.
It's true. It's absolutely true.
We're both like, you're so dumb. You're a big dumb baby.
You're a big dummy. He's like, joke's on you. The dumb act is an act. Because I get away with shit because you think I'm dumb.